Fire rescue, EMS, law enforcement. These are the three components of public safety. And those who answer the call are the first responders. Welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force with your host, Steve Green. Five Alarm Task Force presents some of the best instructors, leaders, and mentors in public safety today to educate, elucidate, and entertain. No topic is out of bounds, and every opinion has value. Five Alarm Task Force is brought to you by Five Alarm Task Force Corp., One Family, One Mission, first responders helping each other, and our sponsors, Insight Fire Training LLC, your best bet for fire service tech training, and by the Firehouse Tribune, where you can expand your horizons in emergency services and learn to work hard, stay safe, and live inspired. And our promotional partners, Chief Miller Products and Sites, LifeScan Wellness Center, saving the lives of America's heroes, Nestabars, the amazing new hand tool for the fire service, EFT Corporation, 40-plus years of innovation in donation and payment processing solutions. The Firefighter Cancer Foundation, fighting to extinguish firefighter cancer since 2004. The Firefighter Cancer Support Network, the Albemarle Sweet Shop, the North Florida Fire Expo, and the Great Florida Fire School. Remember, our ultimate goal is for you to be safe and return home after every call. So insert those earphones or turn up those speakers. The 5-Alarm Task Force is being dispatched right now. Hello and welcome to this episode of Five Alarm Task Force. I'm your host, Steve Green. Happy to be here with you. Happy to have you with us. Whether you're watching us on our YouTube channel, Five Alarm Task Force Corp., or you're listening to the audio on your favorite podcast platform, we're always glad you're here with us. My guests today are retired Chief Dan Jones and his business partner, Kelly Walsh. And their website is www.bravefireleader.com. And today they are announcing the release of their new book called Facing the Fire, Stories to Ignite Leadership Excellence. And there's a special coming on about it on Amazon, and we'll tell you about that in just a moment. If you enjoy today's podcast and you'd like to hear some more, well, I'm sure you can find them on your podcast platforms. You can find the videos on our YouTube channel, the number 5, I always have to keep saying that, the number 5-Alarm Task Force Corp. Or you can visit us at our website, the same basic name, the number 5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org, and just choose the word podcast from the top menu, and that will take you to our library of more than 160 episodes of our show dating back all the way to 2016 with some great guests we have had over the years. And while you're on the website, if you're listening, then you can go to the homepage also, and there you can register to receive our newsletter. It comes out 4 or 5 times a year. We'll have one coming out relatively soon, and it contains information about what's going on with the nonprofit, our store, our blog, news about the company, etc. And we don't send spam. We don't give away or sell your emails. We protect it as best we can under the laws. So we'd love to have you with us. And should you ever decide you don't want to receive the newsletter anymore, all you have to do is send us an email to dalmatprod@outlook.com and just put the word unsubscribe in the subject line. We'll take care of that for you. We hope you like us on Facebook if you see us there. It's kind of a strange name that you have to follow now, and you'll hear that at the end of the show. But we're going to work with Facebook, see if we can bring it just to 5 Alarm Task Force Corp. But we are trying to get back to all of you who like us. It is amazing the numbers that are growing each time I visit. We hear me, myself, Steve Green, and our two members of the board, Battalion Chief Andy Starnes and Firefighter Instructor Nick Higgins. We could not be more happy with the response we get on Facebook. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You are part of the lifeblood of this podcast and what we do. And the podcast platform you may be using probably provides you an opportunity to leave a quick review, whether it's a few stars or a couple of sentences. So why is that important for us? Well, because most of the platforms use those reviews as part of the algorithm for search results. So if somebody else comes looking for our podcast, if we don't have any good reviews or just a couple, we're going to be very low down on that search result. If we have a good number of positive reviews, whether it's the stars or some positive comments, we'll be much higher on that. So you could really, truly help us and help others who are looking for us find us more quickly through that. Finally, on the store, well, we're sold out, but we have some news coming up about the store and what we're going to be doing for it and for you. And part of that is going to be, because we discussed it in the last podcast, but I'm going to give you a little hint now. Part of that is we're going to start setting donation levels, at which point you don't have to buy a t-shirt because we're going to give you a free t-shirt. You just have to let us know the color and the size you want, and we're going to do that. Try to do that for you. And maybe a couple of other pieces we can put in the store that you'd be interested in. So that's all coming up. And that's really it. We hope you'll stand by for a few messages, and we'll be right back with my guests, Chief Dan Jones and Kelly Walsh, as they announce their new book, Facing the Fire, Stories to Ignite Leadership Excellence. As always, please stay tuned. New technology for the fire service seems to appear almost every day, and that technology demands a learning curve, especially if we're talking about thermal imaging cameras. That's where Insight Fire Training LLC is your best bet. With an excellent reputation across the U.S., Insight Fire Training will meet all your TIC training needs. Their curriculum is peer-reviewed and has been used internationally. Their instructors are Level 1 Thermography certified, and they have taught in 33 states and 4 countries. Their courses run from introductory to training the trainers. Courses are available online, classroom, classroom hybrid, and even live fire. Insight Training LLC is proficient in over 40 thermal imaging cameras, so you'll feel confident that they will know your make and model. Best of all, programs are customized to your specific needs, and their cadre of fire service veterans are vetted craftsmen of Project Kill the Flashover. They are so proficient that they have trained TIC manufacturers on how best to use and sell their own product. And from now through September 10th, if you're going to Firehouse Expo in Nashville, register for their 8-hour live fire class that will be offered on 2 separate days. That's Insight Fire Training LLC. Look them up online at insightfiretrainingllc.com, your best bet for TIC training. Would you like to meet up with Andy and the team from Insight Training? Well, here's their schedule for the month of May. Coming up this weekend, May 1st through 2nd, Bridgeport, West Virginia, Fire Expo. Instructors Andy Starnes and Joey Baxa will offer the Tactical 360 Enhancing Fireground Strategies and Tactics course. This event is sponsored and in partnership with Interstate Rescue. You may register at the following link, https://events.interstaterescue.com/2021-Bridgeport-WV-Fire-Expo/. May 15th, 2021, Burnsville Volunteer Fire Department in West Virginia for an 8-hour Max Firebox Burn and Learn Thermal Imaging Training event. Instructors Andy Starnes and Joey Baxa will be conducting a classroom hybrid training where students will learn about tactical thermal imaging concepts in the classroom, followed by hands-on training examples with a Max Firebox. And May 22nd, Shinston Volunteer Fire Department, West Virginia, for a 4-hour Max Firebox Burn and Learn Thermal Imaging Training event. Instructor Joey Baxa will be conducting a classroom hybrid training event where students will learn about tactical thermal imaging concepts in the classroom, followed by hands-on training examples with Max Firebox. That's it for June. Please be sure to check their website, insighttrainingllc.com, or their Facebook page for registration and additional information. Insight Training LLC, your best bet for fire service TIC training. The Firehouse Tribune, where inspiration was forged by those who came before us, opening the doors for us to build a path to share our mission with the rest of the emergency service world. With a small, tight-knit team of first responders dedicated to sharing experiences and knowledge, we constantly strive to provide our followers with thought-provoking content from all aspects of emergency services and life. Our contributors speak at top fire and EMS conferences in the country. They have been guests on numerous fire service podcasts and will even come and speak at your firehouse or event. Interested? Visit their website, www.thefirehousetribune.com, and find them on Facebook using The Firehouse Tribune, and on Twitter at FH Tribune, and on Instagram, FH Tribune. We live by one motto, not just in emergency services, but in life as well. Excellence is a habit, not a goal. We look forward to hearing from you soon. Until next time, work hard, stay safe, and live as fire.
Welcome to Chief Miller. Chief Miller operates the largest social media page dedicated to the men and women of the fire service from around the world. Check him out on Instagram at Chief_Miller. Find him on Twitter at Chief_Miller. And check out the website where you can find Chief Miller Apparel at ChiefMillerApparel.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force. I'm your host, Steve Green. Happy to be with you. Happy to have you with us, whether you are watching us on our YouTube video and or listening to the audio. Now, very important announcement. We are recording this on Tuesday, April 27th, Tuesday morning. And our guests today are retired Chief Dan Jones and Kelly Walsh. And they have a very big announcement they're going to make that's important for Wednesday morning, the 28th. So we're going to try to get this video posted today or the first thing tomorrow morning, one way or another, so that you can avail yourself of this big announcement. But let me tell you a little bit about our guest, Kelly Walsh. Kelly helps individuals and organizations achieve exceptional performance by applying specific tools and techniques that guide leadership development. She works on large-scale vision and strategy, but also deploys specific actionable steps that deliver measurable results. She has worked in a variety of industries, including for-profit, nonprofit, and city government, but her heart is with the public sector, where she can bring her strengths to the people who protect and serve our communities. Uniquely qualified to work with fire departments, Kelly has 20 years of experience in human resources with 10 years as an HR partner, partially embedded to a 350-person municipal fire department in Mesa, Arizona. She holds a Master of Education degree and a major in counseling, is a certified leadership coach and mediator, and has worked in organizations as a recruiter, leader, mentor, trainer, coach, and strategist. The development of future leaders and creating a culture of well-being for employees are at the cornerstone of Kelly's expertise. She has authored and is featured as an industry expert in articles published in the Wall Street Journal, Computer World, CEO Blog Nation, Huffington Post, and others. Our other guest, Chief Dan Jones. He entered the fire service in February of 1974 and rose through the ranks to retire as fire chief in 2015. The chief served for over 16 years in the Pinellas Park, Florida Fire Department before relocating to Chapel Hill, North Carolina in 1990 to become fire chief. Upon his retirement, the chief was the longest serving municipal fire chief in the state of North Carolina. Chief Jones has served on a variety of committees, councils, and boards at the local, state, and national levels. He is the former editor-in-chief of National Fire and Rescue Magazine and is a past president for the International Society of Fire Service Instructors. He is a former special on-air commentator for CNN Headline News Network and Breaking Fire and Rescue Stories. He is a frequent emergency services conference speaker and is recognized throughout the fire service as an authority in the field of leadership, rearrangement, campus housing, fire safety, fire sprinklers, which he and I share dearly, and motorsports fire rescue, which we also share dearly. He was a great lecturer at the University of North Carolina. He was a guest lecturer at the university, probably great as well, at the University of North Carolina, and has taught or presented in 34 states, Canada, England, Germany, Botswana, and Scotland. The chief is the recipient of numerous awards, including Florida Fire Instructor of the Year, IAFC President Award, and North Carolina's highest civilian honor, the Order of the Longleaf Pine Award. Chief Jones attended St. Petersburg College, Alamance Community College, the National Fire Academy, the National Staff and Command Program at the University of Maryland, and the Institute of Governments at the University of North Carolina. Chief Jones has held up to 12 emergency services technical certifications. He currently resides in Chapel Hill with his wife of 45 years, in a home they built with fire sprinklers. Kelly and Chief, it is a pleasure to welcome you back to Five Alarm Task Force.
It's good to be with you.
Thanks for having us, Steve.
Well, it's my pleasure to have you guys back. You always generate great responses and ratings. Chief, you and I often connect on social media with our posts, especially on Twitter. And we do. We talk about sprinklers a lot together, and we talk about NASCAR. And when I posted my post a couple of weeks ago about what happened on the fire, that we still are seeing our great first responders on the tracks, but going into a vehicle fire without wearing breathing apparatus. And that has got to change. We need that to change, because what's burning, especially the plastic in those cars, what's burning is just as bad as what we're facing in the general fire service.
Oh yeah, the synthetics are so toxic anymore.
Yeah, that's right. So the reason why they're back today, and I'm actually going to turn the show over to them a little bit, is we have this big announcement. So, Chief Dan Jones, would you please share it with our viewers and listeners?
Well, Steve, as you know, Kelly and I have been teaching for the last 5 years in the fire service, teaching leadership and management around the country. The last year during COVID, we've been online teaching, doing virtual classes. But we've had hundreds of students from scores of fire departments all across the country, large and small. And in the process of doing that, we've not only from our own experience, Kelly's experience and mine, have a lot of lessons to share, but our students have shared lessons with us as well. And so during COVID, when everybody was stuck at home and had extra time, Kelly and I kind of put our shoulder to the grindstone and got busy writing. And the result of that, we're excited to announce, is a new book called Facing the Fire, Stories to Ignite Leadership Excellence. And this will be released tomorrow, Wednesday, April 28th on Amazon. There's a special the first few days. You can download an e-copy for Kindle or other types of readers. For just 99 cents. That is a very short-term special that's going to be for the first few days. And then in a week or two, the paperback versions will be available. But what we've done is we've taken the lessons that we've learned over the years in firehouses and in other places, both our own experience, as we said, and some of our students, and we've applied those to leadership lessons. And we've put this book together. We're very excited about this. It's been a labor of love for both of us. And we feel like this book will be a useful tool for leaders, not only in emergency services, fire and EMS, but in other disciplines, because leadership is universal.
Right.
And we can learn from the lessons of our firefighter brothers and sisters. But you can apply those lessons in a variety of disciplines. And Kelly is an expert in how lessons translate across various disciplines because of her varied experience. And she can probably do a better job than I at explaining how that translates.
Kelly, if you will.
Sure. I just want to point out kind of the overarching theme of this book is we were fortunate to have Chief Dennis Compton write our foreword. And he, as you probably know, probably many of your listeners know, was the former chief of Mesa, Arizona Fire Department, worked with Chief Bernasini as an assistant chief, chairman of the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation, and I could go on. Anyway, he was kind enough to write our foreword, and he said something that I felt was a very important quote. And what he said is, through all his experience, 50 years in the fire service, 2 years in the US Army, he said, he's come to realize that it's almost impossible for a group of people to outperform the quality of leadership they receive from their bosses. I'm gonna repeat that because I think it's so important. He's come to realize that it's almost impossible for a group of people to outperform the quality of leadership they receive from their bosses. And when I read that, I was like, wow, that's just kind of our whole mission in a summary statement, you know? And so I've worked in fire service for a long time as a business partner, human resources, but I've also worked in large corporations, nonprofits, and the issues are the same. People are not given the preparation needed before they become leaders. And so they're, you know, you're the best firefighter, we're going to make you a captain. You're the best, teacher. We're going to make you principal of the school. And it's a whole different skill set. It's learnable. But we just take the smart person and we put them in that role, and they don't often succeed because of that. So this has become our mission. And our great love is to go around and spread the word on how to become a better leader.
Well, I think that's so important today. We see on social media, especially over the last, let's say, 5 years, sometimes this somewhat vitriolic debate online, which is easy to occur in social media because of anonymity for a lot of people. that, you know, they want to argue the two most important things in the fire service, which is firefighting tactics and leadership. And yet most of the people, you know, a lot of the people are talking from their gut rather than their heart or their mind. And it's easy to jump on something and be negative if you don't understand it and you've never been in that situation. On the other hand, you hope and expect that the person guiding you, or who is supposed to guide you, prepares you with that knowledge that you need to have for both of those. You know, nobody is born a firefighter. Nobody's born a paramedic or an EMT. I've always said nobody is born with any hatred in their heart or in their mind.
That's because true.
Hatred and bigotry are learned. They're not part of the ethics we're born with as a baby. I see leadership, and I've said this in, you know, my article was published on firehouse.com a couple of years ago, that leadership, I look at leadership and how I trained in my nonprofit sector, which was my professional side, aside from my volunteer fire service duty, was that leadership, I think, I treated it like planting a seed. For you want to grow a vegetable in the garden during the spring and summer. So you put the seed in the soil, you have good soil, you have a little nutrients in it for it, you give it a water, a little sun. And then you take care of it. You check on it every couple of days. Then you wait for that first sprout. And then you take care of that sprout till it gets big. And then you transfer it from that little pot to a bigger pot and you let it keep growing. And you nurture it and you help grow it. Well, we can do the same thing with leadership. But you can't say, I want to grow a sunflower and just grab it and shove it in the ground. And then it wilts and dies. And you say, what did I do wrong? What's the matter with that? It should have happened. That's what we've done in many cases in leadership, especially in the fire service. I can't, you know, and I, as I said before we got on the air, I saw the same situation in nonprofit, Kelly, as you mentioned as well, and in big for-profit corporations. You know, in my nonprofit sector, people would be elected to the board, but they wouldn't, they thought their only responsibility was show up for the meeting, the monthly meeting. And I explained to them as the executive director, no, you can't. That's not the way it works. You have to take on a mantle of responsibility in our organization that you and maybe another co-chair would take care of and report to me. And we'd go over it and plan our activities and stuff like that. If we do it that way, it'll work out great. And so I did board training several places around the country, plus the places I worked at. And I started reading the book last night and this morning. I said, oh my God, this is exactly what I went through in nonprofit. It was the same thing, but it has a much bigger impact though in the fire service, because if we don't have good leaders to lead the troops, then we're not going to do our job to the best of our ability, which is in the oath that we take to protect and serve our communities. And if we don't do that, we're in big trouble. It doesn't make any difference whether you're a municipal department or the smallest rural department with one little old pumper and six volunteers. If you don't do the job right, there's you do for something on the negative side. And it all begins with leadership. And
Steve, we do such a good job in the fire service of teaching operational leadership.
Right.
Fire ground, emergency scene, patient care, leadership. That we've got that down pat in emergency services. We know what we're doing at an emergency scene. But you go back to the firehouse or you go back to fire headquarters, and now you're dealing with an entirely different set of situations. And it involves everything from people issues to dollar issues to politic issues to ethical issues, to project management. And what do we know about that?
Financial management.
It's just like Kelly said, you know, you take the lead, the best you have at the service delivery level, whatever that is, whether it's fire and emergency services, it's education, it's delivery services, it's production and manufacturing, it's nonprofit helping people, whatever that happens to be. But when people get up into that leadership level, it's very different. It's very, very different. And we do such a poor job most of the time of preparing people for that, that what we end up with is on the job training,
right?
Learning by mistake. What Dan a terrible that, way to run Dan an organization.
Dan calls that deep end of the pool learning.
Yeah, we throw people in the deep end to teach them how to swim, you know, and some manage to flail around and dog paddle and keep their head above water until they learn a stroke. Others don't. They go under. And then we go, gee, he was so good at what he did. Why did he drown in the deep end of the pool? Well, that's because he spent most of his time over in the shallow end of the pool. So what Kelly and I really are desire with this book is that leaders, potential leaders, rising leaders, people who aspire to be leaders can use this book and follow the lessons in it. We include questions at the end of each chapter to help people do a little introspection of themselves and their development. And our hope is that people can use this book to help develop those skills that are needed for leadership. And it's not that difficult, quite honestly. Leadership is hard, but learning the skills necessary to be successful at it is not that difficult. It's pretty basic and pretty simple.
Well, one of the things that we all three of us agree on, and we've talked about this before, is that when you join the fire service, whether it's volunteer, career, part pay, wildland, doesn't make any difference. You have to be willing to be a student in your entire career. You have to be willing to continue to learn. Now, you'll learn, as you said, Chief, operationally, fire tactics, safety, medical protocols, et cetera. And we as you said, we have that pretty much down pat. But when you take a great captain, a line captain, who's done a great job with his team on the fire ground or on a rec scene and does great, and then say, okay, we're going to make you a deputy chief in charge of budget and HR. Huh? That's, well, deputy chief, that sounds good. What's HR? You know, we make that jump, and those people simply are not prepared for that level of advancement that way, unless the two things that you've mentioned, one, that they're willing to, that the organization is willing to groom and train that person to make that transitional move, and that person is open to learning more about that side of the department and willing to take on that obligation.
You know, Steve, one of the points that Kelly likes to make when we're teaching, and she makes that point in this book as well, and I'll let her tell it because she can tell it better than I am, but in her HR role in various capacities over the years in different disciplines, most of the messes she had to clean up are the result of
communication issues. Anything that turned into a lawsuit, just a meltdown, an argument, somebody quitting, somebody getting fired. I mean, any of those tragedies started as a communication moment gone wrong. And so fixing those at the time of the occurrence can save us time, money, stress, all kinds of things. And those are really simple things to jump on early if you have the skill set or if you have access to tools and things, which is what Dan and I focus on with our training. And I just wanted to mention also, we call our training program Brave Fire Leader. You can look it up at bravefireleader.com. And we do that because obviously you're brave if you're in the fire service, but we believe it takes a special type of bravery to take on leadership, to take that step into that next level and to, like, you know, it's humbling, it's difficult, and things will happen that have never happened before. Some new law or twist or pandemic or something is going to come up. And it takes a lot of courage to address those things, to look at oneself and to work on these skills. So we want to just focus the fact that we believe it's an act of bravery even to step into the leadership roles.
Well, you know,
yeah, we talk about courage in leadership, and one of the points that we try to always make in both our teaching and in this book is, you know, everybody recognizes the fire service for its courage and say, well, these men and women are willing to run into a burning building, or they're willing to climb a 10-story ladder to get to somebody, or they're willing to hang on a rope down a cliff face to get to somebody. Yes, that takes courage. But you know what also takes courage? Having a difficult conversation with a close employee, or giving constructive criticism to somebody who's not going to accept it very well. And a lot of times people in leadership, supervision, management roles, they shy away from that. They don't have the courage that's necessary to do that. And so leadership takes just as much courage. It might be a little different kind of courage, but courage nonetheless. And if you have the right skill set, as Kelly mentioned, it makes that courage come a little easier, because now you have some tools. Now you have a way to do those things that you know can work, and you have the confidence and the ability based on the lessons in this book, the lessons in our classes, to have that difficult conversation with an employee, or to correct something that's obviously wrong that somebody might take offense at, or to be able to spend extra time with a volunteer firefighter, as you've mentioned, Steve, in our many conversations, to mentor somebody and help them develop to their full potential and develop their skills. All of that takes courage. It takes courage. It takes energy. It takes foresight. And those are exactly the kinds of skills that Kelly and I share in this book.
Well, you know, it's so important, and you just brought something to mind that I hadn't thought about in a long time. When we moved to Syracuse, I was given a job in a synagogue as ritual director. So I was doing a lot of teaching and stuff like that. But they put me in this little closet of a room, and it was on the total other side of the building. So anytime a parent or a child would call from lessons, one of the secretaries would have to walk all the way around, because there was no phone. Yet I did see an Amphenol connector in that small room. So I asked permission. I said, if I can get a phone in there inexpensively, would it be okay? And the president said, yeah, sure. So I called the phone company. I told them, look, there's an Amphenol connector. He goes, how do you know it's an Amphenol? I said, because I know phone systems. I've been working with them for a while. He says, it probably leads right down to the board. I just don't have a tester down to take to the basement. He goes, oh, if you have a connector there, it should only be, you know, a couple of dollars for the install, and just, you know, $3 a month extra on the bill. I said, okay, so let's do it. So we did it. And so about 3 weeks later, the president came to me and says, you did a hell of a job getting that phone put in for such an inexpensive price. I said, did you really bargain with them? I said, no, I didn't need to. I told them what we needed. I told them what was already here. And he said, okay. He says, how would you like to be our acting executive director? I said, huh? He says, well, we haven't had one in 10 years, and we need somebody who can do what you just did for the synagogue. I said, okay. He says, now we're not going to raise your pay yet. This will be a trial.
Of course.
This contract year, and then we'll see, you know, how it goes for the next year. And I said, okay, that's fine. So I said, no, that was okay. But then 3 weeks after that, he comes to me, and it wasn't 3 weeks. I think it was 3 months after that. He comes to me and said, you're going to have to let so-and-so go. Now, they made one of the cardinal sins in nonprofit work is that you never hire an employee. You never hire a member as an employee. Because if you have to terminate that member, you know they're going to be angry. You know they're going to leave the organization altogether. And there were two older women who were the basic secretaries. And there was one other woman in the office who was the receptionist and the bookkeeper. And they said, you have to let this one go. And I said, why do I have to do it? I've only been here, you know, 4 or 5 months. You're the president of the congregation. I didn't hire her. They said, well, you have to let her go. So I looked, I went to the library to look up human resources and to see if I could find anything. You know, this was before the internet. This is 1981. How do I let somebody go nicely? So I couldn't find anything. Called my older brother, who was a rabbi. I said, "What do I do?" He says, "Try to be as nice as you can and as compassionate as you can about it." I said, "Okay." So instead of calling her into my office, I just went to her desk and sat very close with her and sat with her and explained the situation as they had told me. And she gave me a hug and a kiss. And she said, "I know this isn't you, but thank you. I loved working here with you." And that was my lesson. That was the first time I had to do something like that. I had hired teachers in the other synagogue where I had worked as a direct education director. Never had to let anybody go. But being brand new in this COO position and having to do that within just a couple of months of getting it was difficult. And I still felt guilty for months afterwards because I didn't agree with the reason, but I couldn't challenge the board. So,
you know, though, Steve, that's a sign of compassionate leadership when you feel bad about having to let someone go, even when they've caused it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've had to terminate a number of people during my career as a deputy chief and a fire chief. And, even when they've done stuff that they really terminated themselves by their actions or their words or whatever, you still feel bad about it. I worked with a chief officer one time many years ago who enjoyed firing people. He thought it was a fun thing, and he was kind of on a power trip about it. And I never forgot that. And the way he treated people, and I thought, boy, if there's an example of poor leadership, because when you terminate somebody, you're not just terminating their job, you're terminating their income, the way they pay their bills. You may be taking food off the table for their family. You may be affecting their rent or their mortgage payments. And even when they've done something really stupid or really bad that caused that termination, compassionate leaders still will feel badly about that, that it came to that point. And what I say to leaders is, if you have to severely discipline an employee or a volunteer, or you have to terminate somebody and it bothers you, that's a good thing. It's a good thing that it bothers you, because that means you're a compassionate leader.
Right. And I think that's what we often miss in leadership today, is still having compassion, even if you're at that upper level, that you still have to understand where you came from.
You have to care about people.
Yeah, you have to care about the people.
And, you know, Kelly's had a lot of experience with this too in HR, particularly in the private sector, where, you know, they've had layoffs of large numbers of people and stuff, and that usually gets delegated down to HR to be the bad news deliverer. Right. And, you know, they don't make the decisions of who gets terminated or why they're having to do layoffs, but yet they have to be the deliverer of bad news, sort of like you were. And Kelly still talks about that. And I can tell when she talks about it in her classes and stuff, I can tell that it bothers her that they were put in that position. And I don't want to put words in her mouth, but I think I've read that right, haven't I, Kelly?
Oh yeah. I mean, you can't help the situation necessarily, but I've always felt like I feel this way about a lot of things. I feel this way about layoffs. I feel this way about education discipline. Even if, you know, every promotion you have, every hiring you do, there's a bunch of people that weren't hired or weren't promoted and are going to feel badly about that.
Right.
So, you know, and there's many more of those than there are the people who made it. So it's, you know, compassion and just, I always say, like, it's really important to keep the H in HR, the human side of human resources. And then, and just to let people know, you know, that it's, it's hard for you. Here's something they could have done, you know, whatever you can do to kind of be as human about that. So a woman I used to work with years ago, we called her the Velvet Hammer. She used to, like, people were like you, like she had, gave a great response when she'd have to give them news, because she found a way to do it that really resonated with them, helped them look forward, helped them understand. And even when I've had to give disappointing news about not getting a job or not getting a promotion, I feel like I want to let people know why, not just what. Because most people, even if they don't like the decision, they want to at least feel like they've been treated fairly.
Right.
And I think most people, maybe not that day, but they'll get to that if you give them some information to help them feel like they've been treated fairly.
Right. I think, yeah, that's very, very important. And again, that's part of the communication you mentioned before, that you need straight and truthful communication at all times. You can't.
And consistent, like consistent right. organizational communication. You can't just like have a newsletter one day that you've never done a newsletter before. And, you know, like it has to be trusted, reliable, consistent communication. That's the organizational side. And then the interpersonal side is the how are we treating each other?
Right.
How are we developing each other? Are we, if you have to let someone go or there's a discipline situation, have we done everything we can do to make sure that they're developed, that they had the opportunities to be the best that they could?
Right, so right.
Share that responsibility.
You know, Chief, Steve, I want to go ahead, sir.
Steve, when we come back from the break, one of the things that Kelly and I would like to share with you is some of the interesting and funny names of our chapters. I think people will be intrigued when they read our table of contents and they see some of the, yes. the names. They're going to go, what? What is that about? But
love that.
Once we have a chance for people to either read it or explain it to them, they'll get it. They'll understand that, okay, that was kind of a funny way to describe it, but it does describe it.
Right. Before we jump, I wanted to just go back to something you said that was a perfect example. You said operationally in the fire service and EMS, we have our act together operationally. And we saw that with this pandemic. You know, it was just a year ago that we were together. Okay. And yet we saw, and unfortunately, Chief Billy Goldfeder, who keeps talking about communication, is one of the greatest communicators in the fire service, just posted yesterday in Close Calls email that we have lost 123 firefighters to COVID as of yesterday. And I think it was 59 EMS personnel that, but we never hesitated. We figured out ways to get our PPE and keep protect our rigs and sanitize them after we've run these calls. We didn't stop answering calls. People called 911. We were there. We answered the call in the midst of the pandemic, and it took a very heavy toll on our members. That was operationally. But then we look at the overall picture of, okay, we did our job. Now let's let the upper level take care of the administration, the medication, the vaccination, and set us up for delivery. And that didn't even begin to match up to the level that the fire and EMS services rose to in the pandemic.
Yeah, but you know what, Steve? The last year has been tragic on a lot of levels because of this pandemic. And it's been very challenging to the delivery of public safety and emergency services because we don't have the luxury of working from home. Right. We don't have the luxury of saying, we're not doing deliveries now. We're not coming out to your house. We'll just talk to you over the phone or chat with you on the computer to tell you how to handle your emergency. We don't have that luxury. So the service continued as you described. We innovated ways. I've read scores of stories about hazmat teams that came up with ways to sanitize rigs and so forth and protect fire stations through just individual innovation. But one of the prouder things that I think of emergency services does come out of leadership. And that is that emergency services stepped up mm-hmm. and has staffed or managed and led most of these. They worked hand in hand with the health departments around the country
yes.
to manage vaccination sites and testing sites, and firefighters and paramedics were delivering vaccinations and doing COVID testing. And you see incident command systems being used to manage and run these mass vaccination sites. I think that has gone a little bit unnoticed, but I think in the history of fire and emergency services, and particularly from a leadership perspective, that could be one of our proudest periods of time.
Absolutely.
The fact that the emergency services was able to step in, fill in this void. You know, the local health departments and state health departments are dramatically understaffed. They could not have done this by themselves. And emergency services partnered with them and helped deliver those necessary public health services.
Even when they were understaffed and had people in quarantine, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, exactly.
When we got our shots.
Fire departments that had to double up shifts and triple up shifts just to keep people on the rigs. And they did it. They did it, and they found ways to lead through it in their communities. And I think from a leadership standpoint, fire and emergency services across the country deserves a star for that.
Absolutely. When I needed to call rescue when I was sick in November, they know me as a former firefighter, and they were, you know, I told the dispatch when I called that this is my situation, but that I'm my background. And she says, okay, we're going to let them know. And rescue showed up, and they, oh, it's you. Oh, we didn't think this was you. And, you know, and the care was phenomenal, just terrific. I kind of, you know, aged myself. I don't know if I mentioned this yesterday, but in the rig, since I knew I was dehydrated, I asked the medic in the back with me, I said, do you guys still have to call control for starting an IV? He goes, wait a second, how long have you been out? And I said, probably longer than you've been in. He goes, yeah, we gave up having to call control about 25 years ago. We can just start an IV if we deem it necessary. And yet when we went to get our shots, my wife and I both have both of them in. It was our local fire department, some of the people from my station right down the street from me who were there right at the mall around the corner from our home. They're delivering the shots and same thing. You're here? Oh, good. Okay, we'll take care of you. And it was great because they were the ones doing the injections and the vaccinations and the registration. They were there. I mean, dozens of them were there to help manage our local site. And every time I tried, both times I was there, and as many of as I saw, I said, thank you, thank you, thank you. For I know this might not be your day on, but you're here for the extra shift. Thank you for being here. Thank you for taking care of us. Because it was terrific. The organization of our vaccination site was absolutely terrific. I couldn't think of anything better. And they processed you, and they were sweet. They were compassionate. These were just the first two firefighters and rescue people. But they were, you'd think they had years and years of compassion, learning, and experience, because that's how kind and compassionate they were.
Absolutely.
So kudos to my Coral Springs Parkland Fire Department because they were terrific. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. If you're watching the video, you won't see anything different. If you're listening to the audio, we'll be right back right after these words. So please stay tuned. The tone sounds and the dispatcher announces, stations 14 and 16, working residential structure. And that was all you needed to hear. You jump up from your chair, head to the engine, and climb into the jump seat. As the cue screams, you take stock of your PPE. Bunker pants, check. Turnout coat, check. Hood, check. Gloves, check. Escape line, check. SCBA strapped on, you're ready. Upon arrival, you jump off the apparatus, grab the loops of the Red Cross lei, and head for the open front door, where smoke is pouring out. You make sure your buddy is behind you. Crouch low and make your way inside, your trusty SCBA mask hanging on your tool belt. What? Stop everything! What the hell are you thinking? You see, it's a working room and contents fire, and the smoke is banking down almost to the floor. Who do you think you are, Superman? One breath of that crap and the smoke will damage you in some way, guaranteed. All the soot, carbon, carcinogens, and other outgassing materials will enter your body through the pores on your unprotected face. Don't be the domino, the first person down, that forces everyone else to change their tasks to take care of you. Always remember, face piece on. You have comrades depending on you and a family to go to. Face peace on. In October of 2020, in the midst of the pandemic, we launched our new nonprofit company, Five Alarm Task Force Corp. Our motto is one family, one mission, first responders helping each other. Our goal? To assist our brothers and sisters in dire need. Since then, we have dispersed $1,700 to firefighters and or their families to assist them in their trying times. We are committed to continuing this mission. But to do so, we need your help. So many of you are listening or viewing our podcasts or videocasts, not just in the USA, but around the world. Between Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, we have over 5,000 followers and friends. What if 50% of you donated $5? Yes, just $5 to our cause. That would generate nearly $12,000 for our foundation fund. Imagine what we could do with that in helping not only our brother and sister firefighters, but those in EMS and law enforcement. If you are in public safety, you know of what we speak. We love the jobs we do, and we do them to answer the call we receive to be firefighters, paramedics, police officers, etc. But in fulfilling our tasks, we often see tragedy, not only for those we serve, but to those who serve with us. To help, please visit our website at www.5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org and select Donate from the top menu. You can use a credit card or debit card, a check, or even a cash ACH transfer. From the entire team at 5 Alarm Task Force Corp, thank you. Stay safe and stay well.
The physical and mental demands of a firefighter place major stress on our minds and body, and especially our heart. Far too many of our brothers and sisters in the fire and emergency service are lost each year due to cardiac arrest. In fact, statistics show that those of us active in this profession are much more susceptible to cardiac arrest than the general population. Too often, ignoring the warning signs is a fatal decision. Your body will definitely be signaling to you that something is wrong. A feeling that you have never had before. If you don't feel well, don't make it your farewell. Seek medical attention immediately. If someone under your command or in your unit is not feeling well, don't send them home. Don't send them to the bunk hall. Insist they get checked immediately. Let's change the culture in our profession, in our departments, of ignoring the warning signs our bodies are telling us. Visit IAFC.org to learn how.
This message is brought to you by the International Association of Fire Chiefs and this podcaster. And we're back with my guest, Chief Dan Jones and Kelly Walsh. And we are talking about their new book, Facing the Fire, Stories to Ignite Leadership Excellence. And though I will admit, I do not have the opportunity to read the entire book yet, just the first couple of chapters, the foreword by Chief Dennis Compton, as Kelly had mentioned, is amazing. And it says a great deal about the two people who are my guests today and why they put this book together, its goal, the opportunity. Please don't forget, if you missed the first part, that we're recording this on Tuesday the 27th, beginning tomorrow, Wednesday the 28th. The book will be electronic version of the book will be available for 99 cents for the first few days. You can download it for either a Kindle or another electronic reader. And then next week, the paperback will be available as well. And we've been talking about some of the key points that they've brought up. And we briefly discussed education and how important it is. And on social media, I've been a big proponent, having been a lifelong educator myself, of that every firefighter, once you're appointed, once you join, again, whether you're a career volunteer, if you want to be a successful firefighter, even if you have no aspirations for going higher than being frontline, you've got to always be open to learning. You've got to be open to more education. You have to be willing to reach out yourself and look for a class. You want to learn how to tie knots better. You want to learn hydraulics better. Look for a class locally, regionally, or nationally. And it's important for you to understand that sometimes you'll do it on your own dime. But I will tell you that if you do it and it's the right conference, it'll pay you back in spades with the knowledge that you'll acquire that will prepare you to be either the better firefighter or if you take the other courses towards leadership. It's not easy. It's not easy, especially if you're an active firefighter, you have a family maybe, and you have other things going on. But if you make that commitment, and we talked a little bit off here just now between the segments, about if you can make that commitment today, where we have so much more available, where sometimes you don't even have to travel. You can sit in your den, in your living room, in your kitchen. You can take a course for 3 weeks and get a certification in that course right from your own home. Soon, God willing, most of the pandemic will be gone. We'll be back to a new normal for us. It'll give us more opportunities. But education will be the key to your success as a leader. Because as we said in the beginning, nobody is born a leader. Leaders are groomed either on their own or by other leaders who see the best qualities in a person. And I think you
see, we start the book off talking just about this, Pathways to Leadership in Chapter 1. And we talk about the ways that leadership needs to be developed and what's missing in our leadership today in many, not just fire and emergency services, but a lot of disciplines, and how you can fill those gaps in. And, you know, as you said, there's all kinds of opportunities to do that anymore. There's a quote, and I don't remember where I first heard this or where it's from, but I've always remembered this. And it's a short quote, and it's, leaders are learners. And learning is a lifelong process. You know, you can't go to the academy and go get a couple of certifications post-academy and say, okay, I know what I need to know for my fire service career. It's just not that simple anymore. When you and I started in the fire service back in the 70s, you know, the fire service was a pretty narrow discipline. Mm-hmm. We learned some basic first aid, forcible entry, hose streams, ventilation, fire flow, hydraulics, and a little bit of rescue skills, and you were good to go. Well, that's not the case anymore, because a lot of fire departments, in fact, most fire departments, consider themselves full service, which means they don't just extinguish fires. They provide emergency medical service. They provide health care. They provide environmental protection services. They provide event management in many communities. They provide general safety input in a lot of communities. They're involved in community planning and economic development. They're involved in public education on a lot of different levels. We're involved in safe traffic safety things with bike schools and child safety seat programs. So the learning process, even for a frontline firefighter, is a lot more involved and a lot more evolved than it was just 20 or 30 years ago. And that learning has to continue. Now, if you throw in, well, gee, I'd like to be a lieutenant, or I'd like to be a captain, or maybe a battalion chief, and you get a little further along in your career and you watch the leadership of your department and you say, I think I can do that. I want to be an assistant chief or a deputy chief. Well, there's a lot more life skills and leadership skills that are necessary to go to that level. Kelly and I like to relate a story about one of our students. We were teaching a class down in Louisiana, and we had a student in the class who was...
We were actually in Arkansas, and he drove from Louisiana.
Okay, he was from Louisiana, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah,
the class was in Arkansas, you're right. We're looking at a student sitting in the back row that is probably close to my age, if not the same age I am. And we're not going to say what that is, but a silverback, a fire service
experience. It's not about age.
Let's just put it that way. And so when we start the class and we go around and do introductions, it turns out that this gentleman has over 40 years in the fire service. He's a deputy chief, second in command of a large metropolitan department. And he's sitting in our leadership class.
And not he only paid for himself.
Go ahead, Kelly.
Just a reminder, Dan, he self-paid. Most people on their department, he's self-paid.
He sent himself to the class and paid for it himself. Now, a lot of people would say, gee, a 40-year plus veteran deputy chief metro department, why do they need to sit in a leadership class? And he explained it very well to the class. You never stop learning. You never stop learning. And we had some pretty puff chest young lieutenants in the same class from departments who thought they were pretty big stuff and that some of our leadership lessons were going to be beneath them until this gentleman spoke. And once he spoke and explained who he was and his background and why he was in the class, those young puffed out chest lieutenants got very quiet. It was an interesting dynamic to watch. And Kelly and I have related that story over and over.
And great story.
And the gentleman, the deputy chief, has stayed in touch with us and communicates with us from time to time. And is not only that, he sends people he's mentoring to our classes. So you talk about an example of why you never stop learning. He is the epitome of that. And he has both our respect for that piece that he played.
That's a great story. And I think that it's one that I hope our listeners and viewers will take to heart right away, that no matter what your goal is in the fire service, you can set any goal you want for yourself, but you have to remember, you've got to be learning the entire way towards that goal. And that chief story is the best example you could come up with. Terrific.
Kelly does a lot of promotion preparation for senior officers. And it's interesting. People with, you know, more than 20 years experience at this job, and they're going for higher rank positions. And when they team up with Kelly for her to prepare them for promotion to help them compete, it's interesting the things that she has to help them with to advance to the next level.
Kelly, why don't you talk about that a little bit, please?
Yeah, I mean, and this is all levels. I've helped people who are going for the captain testing. Sometimes they missed it last time by one person and they want to get an edge. And so a lot of it is just confidence and practice. So I have a bank of questions that have actually been used over the years, and it's getting the practice out working with me versus getting the practice out when you're actually having your interview. So I help them, even if they have a great answer, I help them figure out how to put a cherry on top. You know, like, how can you make this fantastic? And if it's not so good, we talk about that. And so I've had chiefs who are like heir apparents who are going for a chief job, and you'd think, oh, they're good. But they just haven't sat down maybe to think about what their leadership style is, what, you know, what the main core issues of the department are, and what they're going to be able to bring to that, lay out a 90-day plan, things like that. So it's just, I believe we're also tied up in the moment and going and running, and we're all moving so fast that it's hard to sit down sometimes and be like, what are my beliefs? Why am I doing this? How can I communicate this in a way that shows who I am as a human being and the heart side, not just the technical side, things like that. I'd love to announce these on our page when we get them, but we just had a guy this past week who got promoted to captain in the Berkeley Fire Department, and he's super excited. And he, right before that, I had a guy in a small town in Arizona, and he, I love him because he told me that his personal motto was he wanted to make prevention sexy again. And I was like, good for you. Someone's got to do that. Anyway, but he learned how to position his answers. He had all the answers. It was just, how do you say them? I'm not telling you the answers. I'm just telling you how to say them. His board said not only was he the best interview they had that day, they said it was the best interview he'd had ever. So again, that's just another type of learning, being willing to learn and listen to what's good about what you're saying and what isn't. Typically, we know it. It's in our soul. We know why, but we just need to say it, because the interview boards can't assume that you know it if you don't say it.
Sure, Sure.
And this is a little bit, this is applies a little bit to the second chapter in the book, Steve, that Kelly wrote. It talks about being the message, how you communicate and how you portray yourself to others, not only for promotion interviews, but just in everyday leadership situations.
And not with just words, but with actions and tone, because that matters even more than words.
That's the next note on my pad, be the message. I wrote that down because it's such a strong and positive recommendation to somebody who's looking to promote. Be the message. Don't just talk about it. You have to be it.
We have a lot of people in the fire service, a lot of chiefs in the fire service who know the right buzzwords. They know the things to say, but they don't demonstrate that with their personal actions. And that's where the leadership breaks down.
And I'll give you a real simple example of that, Dan. And that's like, I'll have people who say, well, I believe I have an open door policy and I believe in having an open door. Well, you can have an open door, but if people are afraid to come through it, it's not an effective open door. You have to create a way that draws people, that people want to come share something with you. You're gonna coach them. You're gonna mentor them. You're gonna give them something. They're gonna leave better than they came in, and that's what matters more than whether the door is open or not. And not everybody realizes that. So the open door policy is only as good as how inviting you are as a person.
You know, at the beginning of the book, that first story about the new assistant chief who came in and the chief walked into his office and dropped the budget from the previous year. I think it's a great story. I'd like you to tell our listeners and viewers about that. And then I'd like to follow that up, Chief, with your story of when you were at Chapel Hill, and explain how vast the touch of a fire chief had to expand to work with an entire community.
Yeah. The story that you're referring to in chapter one is a story that I have experienced, but in Kelly and I's classes over the years, we've had numerous chief officers repeat virtually the same story back to us. That they've had a very similar experience. And the story goes something like this. You take a battalion chief off the line and you promote him to assistant chief in administration, and you move him into a 10 by 12 office and give him a bookcase and a desk and a phone. And maybe they now have a car. They say, well, you're now the assistant chief. We've given you three bugles or four bugles or whatever that department uses to designate that. We have a little promotion ceremony and a swearing in, and we'll give you a 2-page job description that was written by somebody in HR. No offense, Kelly. And we
you
say,
don't
okay.
Do it alone.
We say, okay, you're the assistant chief now. Here it is. And so the first week or two, you're trying to kind of figure out what it is you're responsible for. And one day the fire chief walks in. And he's got a budget book in his hand from last year. And he drops the budget book on your desk and he says, well, chief, now that you're assistant chief, one of your duties is to prepare our budget for next year. And here's last year's budget. You can use this as a guide and go ahead and get started on it. It's due in 6 weeks to finance and the city manager. And go ahead and prepare us a budget for next year. And I'll give you a list of things I want included in it, but you go ahead and put it together. And assistant chief says to the new assistant chief says to the fire chief, well, sir, I've never even seen the budget before. Who can help me with this? And the chief goes, well, you know, the assistant chief that just retired, it got you promoted. He left for the islands and he's not really reachable. And so you'll figure it out. Go ahead and get started on it, and walks out of the room. And that's how we learn too many things. That's how we learn. And, you know, now this person who's never even seen the budget book before is got to prepare the budget, which is the financial lifeblood of your organization for the next 12 to 18 months. They have to prepare that and prepare presentations for the city manager or county commission or whoever to convince them of what spending is necessary to sustain emergency services in the community. And we wonder why we never get ahead. We wonder why we struggle with things like this. And if nobody's ever put a budget together, it is very involved. You got to figure out things like overtime and benefits and how much is fuel going to cost for the coming year and how many tires on fire trucks are going to have to be replaced and what payments are due on past fire trucks and is there going to be a pay raise and how is that going to be calculated in and cost of living and the power company is going to raise the rates. So now we got power bills to pay on five stations. How do we figure that out? That's a hell of a way to do business.
And what that is that's the learning gap. And it happens in the budget situation and a million other things. We have a gap in learning. And so the person who keeps coming in has to keep inventing the wheel. So how are we going to go beyond ourselves? How are we going to plan for the future, the vision that fire can be in a community? How are we going to get there if we keep catching up with ourselves?
Right. It's like two steps forward, one step back.
Yep.
In that. So let's get to the story about the Greater Chapel Hill area when you were chief and this problem that was dropped on your desks, so to speak.
Yeah, there was one particular summer. Chapel Hill, North Carolina, is a university community. So a lot of infrastructure work has to be done in the summertime when the colleges are out, because that's when traffic is the least. And Chapel Hill and the neighboring community and the State Department of Transportation and the university were all planning road projects for this particular summer. And they were all in a particular area on the south side of town. And they were going to intersect to some degree. And it was really going to screw up morning commute and normal traffic patterns. And you basically have got four different projects going on that are overlapping each other, run by different superintendents with different timelines, different contractors, everything. City manager comes to me and says, that system you guys use to run things, you use it for the festivals, you use it for the football games, and you use it for big fires and stuff. What do you call that system? It's the incident command system, sir. Yeah, you think you could apply that system to these road projects and coordinate some of that work? Maybe assign one of your officers to it? And I'm sitting there thinking, now, what do fire officers know about road projects? We don't know anything about road projects or road building or road renovation. But he was looking for the coordination aspect of it, the management leadership piece. And so we agreed, me somewhat reluctantly, to assign a deputy chief to set up an incident management system for these four road projects and pull the various folks together involved, contractors, public works, state DOT, police, PIOs for public information purposes. And they created a incident management plan and had regular coordination meetings. And the deputy chief acted as the coordinator or the incident commander for the whole thing. Did he need to know how to build a road? No, all he needed to know was how to manage and coordinate and lead these various agencies working together, which is what we do in the fire service. And he pulled it off and the projects worked. And every morning they put out public alerts about which direction roads would be open for commuting purposes and where the blockages would be. And they coordinated the movement of heavy equipment and so forth so that they weren't double blocking up roads and so forth. And they got it done and it worked. And that's actually chapter 9 in our book is that story and how the incident command system can be repurposed into using it for other things. And if we teach that incident command system to other government department heads and supervisors and so forth, they can learn to use that system to manage major projects and intra-agency cooperation efforts and everything from fun festival street events with Parks and Rec to road projects with Public Works to you name it. So yeah, it works. And the fire service is the expert at it. Kelly likes to tell our students that in the private sector, if corporate executives understood ICS and could put together a coordinating system as fast as the fire service can do it and manage an incident, a project, whatever, in that coordinated fashion, they would kill for that skill and ability. And we don't even think about it. And in fact, in the fire service, we don't think about it off the fire ground. We don't think about how we could use that to do other things. But there are communities that are beginning to use that to manage a variety of things. And here's a skill set that the fire service, emergency services has that they can bring to a community to help with a wide variety of things. What is it? It's added value for the fire service. It makes the fire service more valuable in the community.
Absolutely.
When they see we can provide that type of coordination and help for things that aren't emergency in nature at all.
That's great. It's a great story. And I think it certainly underscores the fact that a fire service leader has to be open to thinking outside the box. We know we can do it on the fire ground of the emergency scene, but what about in day-to-day ops in our communities? And that's the story that says, yes, we can. We have the ability if we're willing to think a little bit wider than just a firehouse and see what we've learned we can share with other people and teach them and guide them on the same road that we went on when we first came to it.
It's a little bit like our third chapter in the book called Feeding the Elephants. Now, if you read that in the text, in the context of the table of contents, and you go, feeding the elephants, what does feeding the elephants have to do with fire service or leadership? But feeding the elephants is about logistics, and nothing happens without logistical support. And so leaders have to recognize you can be a great leader. You can communicate well, as Kelly teaches, and be the message and convince people to go along with what you want to do. But if you don't put the support systems in place to make that happen, it's going to fail. And so you have this balancing act that's necessary for successful leadership. And it involves other things besides the leadership skill itself. It involves things like logistics and support systems and making sure that everybody's on the same sheet of music and understands what the mission and purpose is for everything you do, not just providing emergency services.
I think, as I have to admit, I did not have the opportunity just to read the entire book overnight, but I'm sure in the book, knowing the two of you as I do, there's going to be something about don't doubt yourself. If you aspire for more, don't doubt yourself.
I think there's some of that through the whole book. And yeah. Kelly and I both have had experiences ourselves where we doubted ourselves, but found a way to make things work. And there's several chapters in the book that would address that. And not doubting others as well. There's an interesting chapter 8 in the book, which is judging short skirts. Now that might raise a few eyebrows in fire service and in other disciplines. I go, what? Leadership judging short skirts in today's atmosphere? What is that about? Kelly, you want to explain what judging short skirts is about?
Yeah, this sort of stemmed from a scenario, real life scenario that happened to me where I was in my office in the fire department and I was getting captain results ready. So, I mean, you know, I had 20 candidates lurching at my door waiting for we used to kid around that, like, if I ever had an accident with the results in my car, they'd all step over me to results. So anyway, big deal trying to get all that stuff done and let people know how the list came out. That was happening. Then I get a phone call and there's a it's OSHA on the phone because they think something was stolen off of a vehicle or medical vehicle, and they were concerned that that was a public health hazard. So, okay, so I don't even know how to begin to deal with that. So I'm kind of just juggling. And suddenly this woman comes into the doorway and she's standing there and she's crying. And I'm like, oh my gosh, well, what, you know, are you okay? I'm like, are you okay? Because I'm on two phones. And she's like, no. And so I could tell I had to stop what I was doing. So I stopped what I was doing and I told people I'd call them back, and I invited her in and I said, you know, please tell me what's happening. And she said, is my skirt too short? And I was like, wow, really? And she said, my boss thinks it is. I don't think it is. And I want to know what you think. And so, you know, I got OSHA on the phone and I really, like, it just didn't seem important in that moment. But again, everybody's emergency is important to them, right? So I'm glad I stopped. And I did follow up with her issue, because what she was worried about was they being out of uniform or being, you know, being out of dress code, she got points against her and she could have lost her job if she got disciplined her. So it was about her job. So to her, it was an emergency. So we could handle that. But the magic of that moment for me was I realized, when am I the girl in the short skirt? When are you the girl in the short skirt? When do we go to our chief or go to our city manager or whomever and be like, hey, got this great idea. We can save 10 seconds on response times if we just do this. And it's a timing issue. You know, they might be like, great, come sit down. Or they may have a garbage strike and a police occurrence that's causing a lot of media issues. And they don't really, you know, if I don't plan good timing for that, or if I'm too tone deaf to realize other things are happening, there's more departments than just mine, I'm less likely to be successful at the things I'm putting forward. I can rather not be the girl in the short skirt or and go in, and if I understand all these other things, how can we help you? So it just, the episode kind of gave me a laugh because I realized, like, I do that. So anyway.
The fire service does that.
Yeah.
You know, we think our issues are the biggest, most important, most critical because they're emergency based. But in the whole aspect of a community, maybe that issue is not the hot issue of the moment.
And maybe it will be tomorrow, like the
fire. Yeah, exactly.
For you.
Right, right.
So you have to understand timing issues. And Kelly said to me the other day, we were talking about this chapter, and she said, you know, part of what I realized was that this was an emergency to this young lady. Mm-hmm. And it needed to be addressed. And as a leader, if you completely blow those things off, what happens the next time when that person really does have an issue that you need to be aware of or need help with? And so, you know, we don't get to determine, and I'm stealing a little bit of Kelly's thunder here, but we don't get to determine what somebody else's emergency is. They decide
in the field.
Their emergency.
Right.
Just like in the field, right?
Absolutely.
Just like in the field. Absolutely. And as leaders, we have to respond appropriately to the level that that person is at. We don't get to decide that as leaders.
And, you know, that's what Chief Brunosini basically boiled it all down to when he taught us that our job is to take care of Mrs. Smith on her worst day, even if that worst day is her cat up a tree.
Yes.
And that's
the hot water heater has leaked all over the wood floor or whatever it is. You know, it's minor to us and we won't remember it. But to those people that had that incident, they'll remember that the rest of their lives and they'll share it repeatedly.
Tell the story of how they were treated, whether it was good or not good.
Absolutely. I have a friend who was a captain in a fire department, and we got together at a conference. And he said, well, you know, I don't think I'll ever make battalion chief. And I said, why? He goes, well, he showed me this video. And he was the acting BC on that call that night at a strip center. And, but you know, they could see through the glass that there was a fire inside a restaurant, look right around where the fryer would be. And he sent guys up to the roof and he said, you know, cut me three lines and let me see what's going on upstairs. So they cut a line and said, chief, we got fire on the first line. He goes, okay, go back 30 feet. Give me another cut. Chief, we got fire there. goes, all right, give me, go to the back and give me the fight. We got a fight here. He goes, right, get off the roof and we'll attack it. And it really got going, but out of, I think it was 9 stores, they saved 5 of them. And then he said, yeah, I failed. I said, you failed. I said, look, I was never an officer, but watching that and you telling me you did everything that any other BC would do. You had to determine was there spread and the best way to attack that fire. And you saved 5 of the shops there. That's people, their livelihood, their families. You saved that. He goes, yeah. I said, yeah. Yeah, look at the success of what you did rather than where you think you failed. You know, if that had been burnt down to the ground, okay, that's something else. But it wasn't. You saved people's investments. You saved their families by saving that. And a year and a half later, he was appointed battalion chief, one of the battalion chiefs in his department. So I think that that whole story about don't doubt yourself. If you have that wish, move ahead with it and go. If you go to somebody, that might be your emergency. And hopefully that leader that you go to will understand that and will, if they have the moment at the time at that moment, will address it. Or, hey, that's a good idea. Let's talk about it. I'm tied up right now, but how about tomorrow at 10 a.m.? Are you available to come in and talk about tomorrow at 10 a.m.? I'd love to hear it. Don't doubt yourself if you have that idea to make yourself or where you are better, because that's how we all grow. We all grow together when we do that. I think, and then that whole thing would be the message. I think even that story with the skirt, she was the message because she taught, she was able to bring another point of view to you that you saw that, wait a second.
You have to bring, with be the message, the main thing there is bring your words and actions together. They right. have to be consistent. So kind of like I was saying, if I had an open door, but blew her off because I had something more important going on, that would have been the wrong. Then message am I being? I'm being like, don't come in unless, you know, I say it's okay.
Okay.
That's not what we're there for.
With my limited reading that I got to do, what else can you just share briefly with our listeners and viewers to entice them more a little bit?
One thing I'd like to mention, like, so there's some, you know, there's a mix of things in here. There's some are funny, some are poignant, some are, you know,
some are tragic.
But in some show us in the hero light and some show us in like, you know, shouldn't have done that. But the whole point of it is this book is a tool itself. We tell a story. And actually it's fairly a brief story. We give leadership lessons is the next part and then coaching questions. And I'm an executive coach and, you know, Dan and I coach and mentor all of our students. And it's really important to make the information sticky. You know, when you learn things, it's like, oh, that's interesting. But if you want to really make it stick and really have a change, interact with that. So look at those coaching questions. And there's even an area to, if you have the paper copy, there's even an area to Q&A yourself and do some self-reflection. So, you know, because stuff is going to happen all the time. It does. You know from our lives, like there's crazy things, there's tragic things, funny things. That's life in the fire service, right? But how do we learn from all these things? How do we take these stories and then do something better? You know, I have one in here about a really bad fight between 2 deputy chiefs. And I totally, from the outside, I came in to do a cultural study. I could absolutely see how this happened. They couldn't see what was wrong and it was impacting the whole department. So I talk about that story and how we resolved it. And again, it's not to make everybody look perfect. This stuff happens, right? Teams have conflict. It often happens because we're doing the right things. We're bringing diverse opinions together and things like that. So it's all okay. We just got to learn how to manage it and learn how to lead people through it. So a lot of fun stories, but the book, the overall message is that the book is a tool. So you can just read it for enjoyment or you can read it to work on your leadership. And actually we even have classes and things as well if you want to even take a step further and learn some more for yourself. But this is a great tool for somebody who wants to prepare for promotion, something like that.
I think it's also a great tool for, the person to improve themselves. Just
absolutely.
Even if they don't have the desire to advance yet, it's going to help them be a better person and a better firefighter or EMS
team member.
Right. Team member, whatever, because they're learning from life stories.
Yeah.
How to be better.
Yeah. And Steve, one of the points I'd like to make is that all the stories we use in this book are real. Yeah. These are things that really happened. They either happened to Kelly and I, or we had firsthand knowledge of it, or they're things that happened to people we know that they shared the stories with us. So when you talk about leadership, one of the best ways to learn is to learn from real life experiences of other leaders.
Sure.
And that's what we try to provide in this, is lessons learned through real life experiences. So I think even people not in the fire service, they'll be able to relate with the way we wrote this book, and our editor, Leslie Flowers, helped us with this, is to write it in a way that even people who are not firefighters or not in the fire service can draw leadership lessons out of this and will enjoy the stories. They'll get something out of the stories. They're written in a way that are easily understandable for not just people in the fire service, for people outside the fire service, and written in a way that they can draw the leadership lessons directly out of it. And that's how we structured it. We tell the story, we give the leadership lessons. As Kelly said, there's coaching questions at the end of each chapter to help with introspection and help you to put it in perspective. And we really hope people can use this for self-improvement, for promotion, for organizational development, for their own self-improvement, basically, for lack of a better term.
No, I don't think it's lack. I think it is a great term for self-improvement, because...
And we've even had people in our classes. We've had some folks in our classes come back and say to us, even my wife says the stuff you learn in here helps. So like Kelly's communications classes and my ethics classes and things like that, where people have come back and said, it's helped me in my family life. It's helped me in my organizational life away from the fire service. And it applies to both volunteers and career firefighters. It doesn't, if you draw a paycheck from the fire service, leadership is leadership in the fire service. Doesn't make a difference. Mentoring is mentoring. It doesn't make a difference if they're drawing a paycheck. So we really, like I said at the very beginning, this was a labor of love for both of us. It's something we talked about for a long time doing. The pandemic kind of finally pushed us to sit down and start putting it together. And we feel very strongly that this will be not only a useful book for people, but an enjoyable book.
Well, from what I've read, I love those first few chapters. I love the how you begin with the stories. I think people relate instead of to a textbook that you have to read, a cold textbook. That's what I call, biology textbook, chemistry textbook, math textbook. I think this is the kind of book that people can sit back and read and enjoy and learn from it at the same time, because of the real stories that occurred and then how you provide that analysis with it. And then the coaching at the end of it, the coaching questions, because they're able to grow and they can do it at their own pace and learn. And then they can always go back to it and say, oh, what was that one? What was that one? I can find it. Oh, there's that chapter 9. That was it. That was the one I wanted, because they had read it once and they found something in it that was meaningful to them. And whether it helps them, as you said, for self-improvement, or it helps them on the way to promotion, that doesn't make a difference, as long as it helps the person, the reader, and they get something out of it. That's all we can ask for.
The book's release is tomorrow, Wednesday the 28th, on Amazon. You can look it up by the title, Facing the Fire, or you can look it up by Kelly or I's name, as the authors. Has a great foreword by Dennis Compton. We appreciate the support of anybody who can go on there tomorrow and download a Kindle version. Take advantage of the 99-cent version. It'll only last for a few days, and then the price will go up to the normal price. Take advantage of it. Use it to supplement your career. Use it to supplement your life, draw on the lessons that we share, because they're universal.
They are. And I love what you just said, supplement your life with this learning tool. To you, Chief, and to you, Kelly, I can't thank you enough for honoring us for this announcement. I was so excited when you reached out to do it, and I'm glad we were able to get it done with our viewers here, and then we'll get the audio up as quickly as we can as well. They might miss that 99-cent, but they won't miss the lessons that we talked about, and then they can go out and buy the book itself. And that's the most important thing, is not just them buying on the 99-cent level, but finding the book and getting it so they can learn from it and improve themselves and then go from there. Because when we build that confidence inside and they don't hide in the shell, they're willing to crawl out and say, oh, maybe I can advance. Maybe I could be a lieutenant. Maybe I could be a captain.
Maybe they can be brave and take exactly. that step.
Yeah, be brave. You know, as you said, we're ready to knock down a door and go in through a house full of fire. We're just a hose line and a tick in our hands.
Yep.
But we're afraid to say, maybe I could be a lieutenant. Nah, that doesn't work. If you can go through the fire, and then you can better yourself, improve yourself, and move ahead.
That's kind of what the title of the book about, facing the fire. You know, we face the flames, but do we face the fire of an irate employee or an upset citizen or a difficult decision or a difficult conversation that has to be held? And as we said in the beginning, that takes courage too.
It sure does.
Leadership courage is, it's just a different kind of courage, but it's still courage.
And as the subtitle says, Facing the Fire, Stories to Ignite Leadership Excellence. I think that's what they have to hear. Leadership excellence, these are the stories you can learn from. These are the people you can learn from. And we are honored that you joined us today for this announcement. And we wish you every good luck, every good wish for the success of this book and the continued success of your teaching and your academies that I know you've done around the country, in person, online during the pandemic, and hopefully we'll be back in person in the near future.
Yeah, we're looking forward to the pandemic winding down and Kelly and I being able to get back out and interact directly in person with fire departments and fire officers and aspiring fire officers. One thing that helps Kelly and I with our motivation, quite frankly, is as we have interacted with our students and they come from big departments and little departments and their chiefs and lieutenants and firefighters who hope to be lieutenants and chiefs, the enthusiasm for leadership development that we encounter really pumps Kelly and I up. And almost every class we have, we say at the end of it, we say, boy, that was the best class yet. Great discussions, great insight by the students, great enthusiasm for leadership. And so they motivate us. It's not just us trying to motivate them. They motivate us to share their lessons and go on. And here as we wind down, Steve, I want to say too that Kelly and I wanted to make this announcement with Five Alarm Task Force and you. We believe in your mission. You've been a supporter of ours from the beginning. You have a great audience that I think is shared because some of our students are also part of your audience. And so we thank you for hosting us and being the place where this effort of ours, this book and our classes, bravefireleader.com, where we get to announce these things. So thank you, Steve. Well, and your readers should know that Steve doesn't feel very good today, but he was committed to doing this to help us announce this book tomorrow. And so everybody out there, think some positive thoughts and pray a little prayer for Steve to feel better. And thank you, Steve, for soldiering through and doing this podcast on a day you probably would have rather just kicked back and took it easy.
Well, it's an honor and a pleasure anytime you are on the show as guests. But to me, this was great. This was probably one of the pinnacles of my podcast career, is to be with you together for this announcement. So I thank you very much for honoring me by doing it here. I hope it won't be a year before we're together again, whether we're on Zoom or whether we're live, whatever the case may be. But I look forward to our next meeting, and I wish you all the luck, both of you, all the luck with the book and with the continued classes, because I know how valuable your leadership skills are to teach leadership skills to others and show them that there is a pathway. All they have to do is say, I want to take it.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Steve, very much.
Our pleasure. Folks, if you're watching the video, this will be the end of the program. If you're listening to the audio, we'll be right back right after these words. As always, please stay tuned. For those of you leaving us, thank you for tuning in. We certainly appreciate it. Stay safe and stay well. You're listening to Five Alarm Task Force.
Remember when you were a young boy or girl and someone bullied or teased you? Where do you most often turn? Like many of us, you turn to your family. If you're a first responder, you probably no longer worry about those childhood problems. But there are plenty more that can affect us. Lack of sleep, the tragedy and horror we often see, even life's everyday stumbling blocks, like family illness, money, job problems, and more. So where do you turn now? Your gut reaction might be to keep it to yourself and not tell anyone about the hell you're going through. However, that's not going to help you or anyone else. Instead, you could start with your second family, someone you work with at the firehouse, on the ambulance, or at the station. You spend a lot of time with them, and most of them understand many of the problems you're dealing with. Reach out to a coworker or an officer you trust. Speak to clergy at your house of worship, or contact your SISM team. Don't keep it inside, gnawing away at you. That's not good for you or anyone around you. Know that there are people who stand ready to listen to you and help you without passing judgment. Remember, to carry out your oath to protect life and property, the first life you have to care for is your own. Brought to you by Five Alarm Task Force, along with the Critical Incident Stress Management Team in your area, close by and confidential.
It just slows me down.
It's too hard to do it and put my gear on.
I'm not comfortable.
I'm a big guy, I can't do it.
I'm just not comfortable wearing it.
You gotta be kidding me. Real firefighters don't need them.
Come on, there's no way I can wear my SCBA and my seatbelt at the same time.
Yes, we've heard all the excuses, but we can think of at least one good reason why you should buckle up. Can't you? Be a hero to those who mean the most to you. Buckle up. A message from the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation.
Hi, this is Steve. I'm currently looking at the ResponderSafety.com website, and the news from this great organization that is dedicated to keeping every first responder, fire, rescue, EMS, law enforcement, road rangers, and recovery operators safe in the jobs that we have to do. It is no secret, especially if you listen to this podcast, that being struck and injured and or killed when we respond to emergencies on active roadways, all the way from a small rural road to our largest superhighways, the danger is constantly there. And you always have to be aware of your situational awareness. We cannot think that because we're responding on an emergency to help somebody else in their worst time, that we carry this magic invisible shield around us that will protect us. We don't. Just listen to this, some of these incidents in April. Under line of duty deaths, April 27th, an NYPD officer struck and killed on Long Island Expressway in Queens after he had stopped and was investigating another fatal accident. April 24th, Longview tow operator struck and killed in a wreck on I-5 near Castle Rock. April 23rd, tow operator struck and killed on I-12 while assisting stranded driver. April 9th, Selbyville volunteer fire police officer struck and killed in crash. April 8th, tow truck driver dies following Callaway County wreck. Additionally, April 22nd, firefighter struck by semi on I-80. April 20th, police officer struck by vehicle in Memphis. And more down the lines. Now, two things here are necessary. If you and your department respond to any emergencies on active roadways, and you probably have to, I can't think of a department that wouldn't have to do that. You have to always be aware of how to park your apparatus, especially if you have a blocking apparatus. If you don't, you should look into it. People at IAFC and NVFC are willing to help you get guidance. And the great people at respondersafety.com, like Steve Austin and Jack Sullivan, are there for you as well as are their other workers to help you. And at respondersafety.com, you can take a course for free right online and learn about your situational awareness on emergencies on active roadways, what it takes to set up a blocking truck, blocking apparatus, the zone that the firefighters and rescue people must stay in, how to do it properly. And the same is true for our brothers in blue and our brothers in the green and white, in paramedicine, EMTs, and our law enforcement. They have to learn. Our lights by themselves are no longer enough. As we all know, most of these accidents are occurring due to distracted driving and some sort of DWI driving. Yes, the average citizen makes a mistake as well, but that's often because they're not looking at the road, they're looking at their phone, they're looking at the infotainment system for information, and by the time they look up, it's too late. And whether it's a small mini Cooper or it's an 18-wheeler, something's going to happen that's bad. So please, you've heard us speak about this before. We've had guests from respondersafety.com. We've had fire chiefs who have experienced this themselves with their departments, losing a truck, losing members. We need to be proactive and take care of ourselves even while we're there on scene to help somebody in distress. Please, take a moment, visit respondersafety.com. They will help you there. There is basically no charge. You can take many classes there. You can even get certifications in many of those classes. But remember, to be a rescue person in any of our branches, you always have to be open to learning. You can never shut that door. And going to respondersafety.com just might be a learning experience for you that may save your life. And that's my view.
Did you know that 90% of American communities are served by volunteer fire departments?
and that many of those departments are actively looking for more volunteers. When you hear those sirens, do you say to yourself, "Wish I could do that"? If you have the drive to serve, you can be a volunteer too. Volunteer and combo departments are always looking for new recruits. You'll be trained in the latest firefighting and rescue techniques and protecting your community at the same time. You will be joining the ranks of over 1 million men and women who serve their cities and towns, protecting lives and property. Did you know that the founder of the first volunteer fire department was Benjamin Franklin? If old Ben can do it, so can you. Drop by your local fire department and introduce yourself. You just might know some of the folks already there. Before you know it, those volunteers will be like family. Anyone can be a volunteer. Sure, it takes time and effort, but in your heart, you'll realize that it's all worth it. Want more information? Contact your local fire department or visit makemeafirefighter.org. Alternate? Did you know that 7 out of 10 firefighters in the U.S. are volunteers? And the number of volunteer firefighters is declining every year. Most American fire companies are working to recruit new members. When you hear those sirens, do you say to yourself, "Wish I could do that"? If you have the drive to serve, you can be a volunteer too. Volunteer fire departments are always looking for new recruits. You'll be trained in the latest firefighting and rescue techniques, as well as emergency medical services to protect your community. Volunteers are also needed to help with fundraisers, conduct fire safety programs, and pitch in around the fire station. Drop by your local fire department and introduce yourself. You just might know some of the folks already there. Before you know it, those volunteers will be like family. Anyone can be a volunteer. Sure, it takes time and effort, but in your heart, you'll realize that it's all worth it. Want more information? Contact your local fire department or visit makemeafirefighter.org. Presented by the National Volunteer Fire Council and 5-Alarm Task Force.
And that wraps this episode of 5-Alarm Task Force, brought to you by 5-Alarm Task Force Corp. One family, one mission, first responders helping each other. We'd like to thank our guests, Chief Dan Jones and Kelly Walsh, for joining us to discuss the release of their new book, Facing the Fire, Stories to Ignite Leadership Excellence. Did you know you can find us and subscribe to us on all the top podcast platforms? Just search for the number 5-Alarm Task Force. We also want to thank our sponsors, Insight Training LLC and the Firehouse Tribune, and our promotional partners, Chief Miller Products and Sites, LifeScan Wellness Centers, Nesta Bars, the EFT Corporation, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, the Albemarle Sweet Shop, the North Florida Fire Expo, and the Great Florida Fire School. If you would like to be a guest with us or have a suggestion for a show, please drop us a line to info@5-AlarmTaskForceCorp.org. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at 5-Alarm Task Force, on Facebook at @Stephen.S.Green.1, and on YouTube, please subscribe to our channel, the number 5-Alarm Task Force Corp. Stay up to date with all the news about our podcast, our new nonprofit foundation, and our blog on our website, www.5-AlarmTaskForceCorp.org. I'm Steve Green. Until next time, stay safe, stay well, and let's make sure everyone goes home.